Aliens? Yes. Did I say it? Now I don't even
know. I feel like I'm saying it.
What's good, fam? This is the Queer Archive, a queer and feminist Doctor Who podcast. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Brenna.
And today we're going to be talking about the fifth episode of Series 10, Oxygen.
Let's check our credits, measure the numbers of breaths to the TARDIS, and pull to open to talk about all these anti-capitalist vibes.
Okay. Pull to open. What are our initial reactions?
I think this and Thin Ice are the two best episodes of the series.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah. This episode has some larger problems with what it's saying, which we'll get into later, but it's a really good script. All Matheson scripts are.
They're always bangers. Yeah. How dare he?
Yeah.
He always just has a solid written episode with 10% extremely problematic shit.
Yeah. It reminds me of a Sarah Dollard script in that it's like really focused and has its eye on the prize the whole way.
Mummy on the Orient Express.
Yeah. Flatline, where it's just staying in tune the whole way.
Stay on target.
Stay on target. Just like I tell my students.
Is this Bill's cutest look? It's so cute, this episode. Every episode, we're all like, is this Bill's cutest look?
I don't know if it's her cutest look, but I really hope the BBC gave her $200 in massage coupons, because I feel like standing with your head like that for that long would really give you a crick in your neck. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because it was a good portion of the episode.
Yes.
Let alone filming those portions. This opening scene is that girl.
It's a good opening scene.
When Ivan finally opens the hatch, but you can't hear the zombies coming from him. And it's like switching between the noise, the screaming, and then complete silence.
Yeah.
And of course, the classic cut to the theme song mid his scream, finding out that his girlfriend is a zombie.
Yeah. I wonder how much of this was inspired by Gravity, the film, because Gravity came out in 2013 and this was in 2017, I think. Just the idea of, like, the terror of space, the oppressive darkness and lack of sound.
Yep. Dang. 2013?
Yeah.
I never saw it, actually.
I thought you went with me and Aaron.
I absolutely did not get around to it. I think I heard from, like, one too many people that it was really dizzying.
It 10,000% would have made you throw up. You would have been so dizzy.
I heard it was great, though.
Okay.
I heard it was okay, though.
It's good. Sandra Bullock does a great job. The direction's really good. It's, like, fine.
Yeah.
There's a very obvious birth metaphor at the end. She's reborn out of a pod, and you're like, yeah, okay. I get it.
Yeah. Speaking of non-subtlety, I love how adamant they were on making sure we knew that oxygen was the key commodity here. Like, every 5 minutes, they're like, don't waste your breath, the one thing we cannot waste. And, of course, that's Ivan saying that out loud, wasting his breath at the moment.
I do love the actress playing Abby here. Fucking Fringilla, back at it again. She's a bad, bad bitch. Fringilla in The Witcher is the same actress as Abby here.
Mm.
So, she's a bad bitch. I think that steely reserve is her wheelhouse as an actor.
Yeah.
When she's like,
what you're good at, man.
Open the doors.
Yeah. Don't fuck shit up.
You don't fuck with Fringilla, and you don't fuck with Abby either.
I loved it. So, like we said, this episode wasn't subtle.
For God's sake, stay away from the suit.
But you know what also isn't subtle? Fucking capitalism.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, I buy it. I stand. I buy it. So much capitalist language is embedded into our culture. Speaking of don't waste your breath, the idea that we spend time or breath is like ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we be using capitalist language to describe everything. And so I kind of like how this episode interrogates that, or at least presents it as something to think about. So we were talking about how, like, wasting your breath itself is language rooted in viewing everything in terms of capital and how much money it does or does not make. Because, like, outside of this logic, you literally cannot waste your breath. You cannot waste time. You don't own time, bitch. How could you waste something that you literally have no control over?
When we have control again.
You never had control. That's the illusion.
Because time ain't money, breath ain't money, and people ain't money. But yet, we out here talking about investing in ourselves, consuming things like media, taking stock of a situation, and you are an asset yourself to your team, to your family, to your friends, etc. And all of this, quote-unquote, normal vocabulary is just one product of how deeply ingrained a capitalist mentality is and how we frame the world around us every day. See how I just used the word product to describe an effect that something has? Like, even writing some of these notes, I was like, there's another one, there's another one. Every day. Which, like, the language in and of itself isn't the evil, but it's just a reflection of, oh, actually, I've totally adopted all of this kind of logic, and it totally affects how I view people around me and my relationships, and whether or not they bring, quote-unquote, value into my life.
Yeah.
Lastly, we got to talk about 12 being a stunt queen. Because the ending of this episode, when he reveals that he's still blind, has got to be the most he-really-doing-the-most moment ever.
Yeah. Like, to black.
Oh, my God.
I'm still blind. The drama. I'll never see anything again.
Dun, dun, dun.
The premise of that is so ridiculous because it's like, of course you'll see something again. You're the doctor. You're the star of the show. I know we're not going that wild out here.
Moffitt's not going to retcon that hard.
No, well, and he's just not going to, I don't think, I mean, I'm sad to say this, but I don't think we'll ever see a disabled doctor.
I know.
And we'll or talk more about this when we get to the Black Archive.
I think
Archive.
They would start that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're not going to. I feel
fairly
confident.
I need to calm the fuck down.
But this show is just not going to do that to its protagonist because it's not that radical, which is, I mean.
Sad.
It is sad. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think at the time, though, they are wondering, is he going to stay blind until regeneration?
Yeah, they talked about keeping it the rest of the series,
but
they didn't.
But it lifts, like, next episode, right?
No, it lifts in the pyramid at the end of the world.
Okay. Which is the second almost monk. Yeah, it's weird that there's this three-parter coming up that isn't the ending of the season. It's actually like right before.
It's
the
bizarre
leading up
it's
to the ending of the season.
Eaters of Light and then the two-parter, right?
The fuck? Exactly. It's whack.
Anyways.
It's like they could have skipped that whole three-parter.
They really could have.
And we could too.
There are literally like two scenes I like in Extremis. Sorry, future Brenna.
Bill's eyebrows existing, Bill's hair existing.
Oh, no, I like the numbers reveal scene when they're beating the table.
Okay, that's fair.
Cern's going to blow themselves up. That's cool.
No, it's true, it's true. Extremis has some good stuff.
It has some good beats.
Can't say much for the next two, but we will get there. Okay, should we move on?
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what I would value besides this load of drama?
What?
Hopping in this thing to get out of here and head for the High Council.
Okay, let's do it.
Right, this is the High Council of Gallifrey, the segment where we talk about folks in the power positions in the world of Who production.
Sweet. So we did already spoil a little bit. Jamie Matheson is back.
Matheson, who wrote Flatline, Mummy, and The Girl Who Lived. Originally, his pitch was like super fast space zombies, and the survivors were...
No, thank you, please.
Yeah. And the survivors were jumping from ship to ship to try and escape them, and they had to keep finding oxygen on the ships.
Oh, I mean, that's kind of dope.
Yeah, it was going to be like a spaceship graveyard.
Yeah.
And then they would have to, like, take their helmets on and off as they jumped in and out of space. But then as things tend to go, as revisions progressed, it kind of changed into making the suits the bad guys. Again, Jamie Matheson has that official website /blog where he writes some stuff about some of the episodes he's done. So we'll put the link in the show notes, but you can read him actually giving the description of the sort of pitch meeting and then the revisions meeting. And it was Moffat who said, what if the suits were the bad guys? And then he was like, oh, yeah. And then he started planning out like set pieces anyways. But he talked about that once he knew the suits were going to be the bad guys, it sort of unlocked a whole new way to kind of tackle the broader ideas of the episode.
Oh, so did capitalism as the quote-unquote villain come later?
He always wanted capitalism to be the villain because oxygen was always going to be the ticking clock, commodity. He said in that, yeah. So he talked about running out of oxygen being the actual, the trope, the ticking clock for pushing the action forward, but that it got more menacing as revisions went on. By the way, anytime somebody complains about Doctor Who being too political now, I just think about this episode, Oxygen, which is like an anti-capitalist screed.
It really could not be more obvious.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that capitalism needs to burn in a fiery pit, but when people are like, it's too political now, it's like, the show has always been political. Science fiction is political. Whatever. Anyways, Jamie Matheson also, he wrote that he intended to make the mining company Gus from Mummy on the Orient Express.
Stop.
No. So originally this was going to take place a couple of decades before Mummy, and when they got to the center of the ship, they were going to be on a phone call with the, like, the head guy from Chasm Forge. No, from Ganymede Systems, which was originally going to be Ganymede User Systems. G-U-S. Gus. And the Doctor was going to recognize the voice. Doctor
Who loves an acronym.
I know. But Jamie Matheson wrote in that blog, he said, after the reveal of the monsters and the ship and all that, it felt kind of silly to go through that big scene where the Doctor saves the day and still have more story coming. Mm. So they ended up streamlining Gus out of the story.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that when Moffat was working with Jamie on this, his note was mainly, I want to make space dangerous again. And so they went back to the basics and they're like, you know, space is actually pretty dangerous itself. Let's maybe harken back to that a little bit, which I thought they did really well.
Yeah, getting boiled alive sounds pretty dangerous.
Sounds like a threat to me. I mean, all of this stuff that people are, like, afraid about space, I'm like, I feel like we know more about space than we do about the ocean. That's exactly all that fear that you guys have. I have about going inside a lake itself.
A lake? Mm-hmm. A lake and an ocean are not the same.
I don't think my body knows that.
Okay.
I don't know. There could be sharks in there. Also, alligators or crocodiles or both. I don't remember which one.
Okay.
They live in lakes.
Okay.
And rivers. And swimming pools.
Okay.
Also, sometimes in trees?
Yes.
Why? Okay. We can literally cut all of that out. I love the professor sequence that we get again where Capaldi's on stage with his chalk and the chalkboard and we're like actually learning about cool space things.
So how does space kill you? I'm glad you asked.
He's drawing a skull.
He's drawing a fucking skull. That was brilliant because we're like, oh yeah, he draws. I love how they remind us of that every once in a while.
I'm pretty sure Peter Capaldi drew that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Random note, apparently, Lauren Pate, she is the third assistant director, I believe, for at least Series 11. Mm. And so I recognized her from just general social media posts from Jodie's first season and her with the cast all the time interviewing them. And I was like, that's that girl. She was in the show. But also, back to the terrifying danger of space, I feel like the threat is most effective, mainly due to Pearl Mackey's acting.
Yeah.
She does just a fantastic job performing in the scene where she's being exposed to the vacuum of space.
Yeah, that seems like, so scary.
Yeah. Like, in general, I think it's a really well-done scene, even though, at the end of the day, I really, really hate having the Black queer companion experience such a traumatic near-death experience twice in the same episode.
Yeah.
The first one was really well done. The second one I could probably have done without.
Yeah.
But they did a good job. And even the directing in there, which we'll get to next, we have Charles Palmer. The directing in that episode with the muffled sound and the shaky handycam work and the reoccurring focus on the random zombie on the other side of that, you know, famous circular window was really well done.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, Charles Palmer directed some Tenet episodes. He did Smith and Jones and The Shakespeare Code and the Human Nature Family of Blood two-parter. And then he did this, and he also does The Eaters of Light in this series. So he's been around. And I do think that it's pretty solid direction here. I think that opening scene is indeed a banger. And the airlock scene, like you were just saying, is really, really good. That tense, nice use of sound elimination when they're flipping back and forth between the perspectives of people is really, really good.
Yeah, everyone's just kind of like cloudy around Bill as she's like, what the fuck is going on? So good. Also, costume design. this episode, I always think of how awesome these spacesuits are.
Yeah.
And then the idea of the force field as their invisible helmet. So, so good.
Yeah. Rey's so good. And whoever, the special effects for this episode are really good too.
Yeah.
So congrats to the VFX team.
Really good looking.
Well, who knew Matheson was so socialist?
Right? It's a shame that the episode wasn't quite equally rad on other things.
Totally. We can head to the Black Archives to talk about what was good and what was messy.
Messy. All right, we are in the Black Archive, a segment where we examine things like race, class, sexuality, gender, bodies, all the good stuff that your mom warned you about. What do we got?
Overthrow space capitalism, burn it all down, Elmo in front of fire dot gif.
But no, pick yourself up by your space bootstraps, Brenna. Work hard, and you will be rewarded with the privilege of breathing. Obviously, right? It's not that hard. Step number one of capitalism. Create the need your products can conveniently fill, even if you have to create the need out of thin air.
Oh, baby, that's so bad.
It's so good. You mean good. But yeah, so we got capitalism in space. So exciting. And when it hits space, workers are reliant on capitalists not only for tools to work, but the very air they breathe, because that's not something just anyone should have access to, right? And if you think it's far-fetched, commodifying actual air that you breathe, I just have two words for you. Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
Commodifying actual water, selling it back to you, that should be a human right.
There are actually two dirtbags in Colorado who were, they said as a joke, bottling Rocky Mountain air, which was selling out because of China last summer because the pollution got so bad and air masks weren't sufficient. So people were, like, there are actual oxygen bars in China that you can go to get a fresh breath of air.
Yay, late capitalism. Not far-fetched at all.
No.
This is why I'm like, yeah, this episode wasn't subtle, but capitalism literally isn't. It's a little bit subtle at all.
It's really not that far off either. Yeah. Like, this is happening now. We're just not in space.
Yeah. So here we are. Space capitalism be like, you know that stuff you need to breathe? We got you covered. Just give us your labor and we'll allow you to continue breathing so you can work, obviously. You know, it's a win-win situation.
It's a scam.
It's a scam. But, I mean, like, even if you do die, though, no rest for even the dead in space capitalism. Because, like, they die and the suits keep working.
Keep working, bitch.
Oh, yeah.
You won't even rest when you're dead.
But I was also thinking about with how many glitches and problems the suits had themselves. It just shows that they were built by, like, capitalist culture itself. Just move fast and break things. That ends up having consequences only for the most vulnerable, the workers themselves.
Yeah.
Some of you may die, but it's a sacrifice I am willing to make.
Boo. So the conclusions that this episode draws, just like any strike or boycott, the doctor has to threaten loss of productivity and profit in order to get the system's attention. And in the end, it does applaud the rebellion and advocate for the people to fight back. But I'm going to be honest, like, at the very end, it just somewhat slightly undercuts the whole critique of capitalism specifically as a system when the doctor says that then humanity finds a whole new mistake to make. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I was just like, oh, we could have just done without that line.
Yeah.
Like, it's true there's other systems built upon the same injustices, but really, like, humanity keeps making the same mistakes. It's not just, like, the polar opposite of capitalism is also equally as bad. It's just like, let's just focus on critiquing this because there's so much there to critique.
Yeah, it's like it undercuts the punch.
Yeah. Yup. But I do appreciate the poignant focus on capitalism as a system that many participate in or may have very little choice but to participate in, rather than focusing on the demonization of individuals who are just, quote unquote, bad people.
Are you looking at Kerblam in the corner of your eye right now?
Exactly. And yes.
Kerblam thought it was about capitalism, but it wasn't.
It is actually a great comparison to make that we should circle back around to when we get to Kerblam. Because, woof, boy, like 5 minutes into that episode, we're like, oh, no. Maybe don't keep going down that route. It'll turn itself around. Nope.
That was so scary so many different times. I hated that.
yeah, this episode, compared to Kerplam, is very much not afraid to say that the system itself is actually not broken. It is working the way it was intended to operate. And we need to actually completely abandon this system, burn it down, rebel from it, and move on from it, rather than saying, the system's just broken, and we need to make some tweaks here and there and implement just the right amount of, you know, rules here to keep whoever's in power accountable. And then I'll be fine. The system, though, it's fine. We could just fix it.
Yeah. Oxygen is like, it's a feature, not a bug in an episode.
Nope.
Killing people is not a bug. It's not the suits malfunctioning. It's the suits doing what they were designed to do.
Yep.
Destroy your organic component.
This episode is saying that just like any system of power, there is a logic, and in this case, it's a relentless logic concerned with only the bottom line, which the doctor says outright, and at the end of the day, that is truly capitalism's only goal, profit. How to stay afloat, bringing in the most profit, and not be buried within its own system and dominated by other competitors, right? So at times, this agenda aligns with, quote-unquote, a good cause, but it's never for the sake of justice. It's always because the cause happens to be more profitable in that moment, as we see here. So not killing the remaining crew is not to spare their lives. It's to spare their wallet.
Yeah.
And just happens to align with keeping those employees alive.
Mm-hmm. Corporations aren't your friend.
Nope.
Ever.
Nope.
They don't care about you.
They don't care about a queer liberation movement. No.
They don't care about Black lives.
Nope.
They don't care about social equality.
Bro, do they not?
No.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody somewhere in that corporation does care, but no.
But you gotta play the game. You gotta join the suits. And you too can be a superstar, millionaire, person that can still breathe.
Bleak. Oh God, bleak. Okay, should we talk about Ellie and Ivan at the beginning?
Girl! Oof. So I just gotta, okay, so you hear oxygen levels critical, and then you continue to use up your breath talking about how you want a baby? Now's not the time, Ellie. You see your man's not hearing you. The audio connection is gone. And you still be using up your oxygen to talk to yourself out loud. And he does the same thing. But it wasn't clear if, like,
she could actually hear him.
So maybe
he's telling her to stop talking.
His stuff was justified. But, like, are the straights okay?
No, we know that. I do. Let's just say for the record, there's nothing wrong with wanting to have children. That is wonderful if that's what you want. But in this episode, it is employing a trope, and that trope is really tired, which is a woman's only purpose is to serve men or to bear children, which is often framed as a way of serving men. So she's facing the gaping maw of existential dread, the end of her life. And that's, she tells us, that's what makes her realize she knows what truly matters, and it's having kids. And even in the end, her sole purpose is to give her oxygen to Ivan. That sucks. That really, really sucks.
That's all we know about her is that she's the woman who has the first death on screen and she wants to have kids and then ends up giving her oxygen to her alive husband.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, 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 cool.
Oh, you go.
I was just like, again, obviously this is not about demonizing wanting to have kids.
No.
Like, the layers here are like, that's all we know about her.
Yeah, and that's a really common storytelling trope where it's like a woman is defined by her ability to
realizes her purpose on earth. Yeah.
Or to serve her man.
Yeah.
And she does both, and that's all we know about
her. Cool.
Another thing that is also cool, 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 is blindness as a metaphor for needing other people. Just so fucking ableist.
Yeah.
It is so upsetting.
Yeah, because what's happening here is the episode is trying to shift into saying, how do we say the doctor really doesn't need or want help?
Yeah.
Oh, give him a disability.
That sucks.
That's using it as a tool and both also using it for shock value, because it's not like we're regularly seeing blind actors and characters included on this show to show the breadth of that experience, right? And having the doctor be temporarily blind is also not showing the experience of a blind person.
No.
Like we said, it's very much a stunt queen moment. So it's just for shock value and it's used like as a tool.
A point of spectacle, which already makes it shitty.
Yeah.
It also positions blindness as a weakness, that it makes a person incomplete or that they are insufficient somehow as a human, and that is also deeply shitty. Blind people have rich lives with interiority and will and volition. Please, dear God, stop using disabilities as a shorthand for being dependent or broken or whatever the fuck else. It is so offensive and so dehumanizing.
Get the fuck out of here.
You really, truly get the fuck out of here. I want to burn it off the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Ableism is, like, one of the sneakiest ones because it's so embedded, especially in this, like, what's really upsetting is this is an episode about capitalism and it's critiquing capitalism. And then what happens is capitalism is so ingrained in how we view, quote unquote, productivity or worthiness that it ends up becoming a way that people look at disability as, like, insufficiency. And that is just shitty.
Absolutely. Capitalism and ableism
shitty
are best buds, and they operate totally in tandem. Also, so does racism.
Yes.
Which we will talk about later.
This is why I say I think this episode is one of the best of series 10, but goddamn does it have some problems. Holy fuck. Yeah,
I really still do think this episode is solid.
The script is great.
So great.
Pacing great.
Acting is great.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of this is really great, but like a proper Jamie Matheson script and episode, there's always just like 10% of like complete trash.
Whoa, what the fuck?
Yeah. And we're obviously going to acknowledge it because this show could be so much better without it. We don't need that 10% trash.
Yeah, I do want to say that there have been fictional portrayals of blind people done by not blind actors, which I do think that the experiences should be done by actors who live those experiences because they rarely get those opportunities. But somebody who I think plays a character who's blind and does a good job of it is Charlie Cox in Daredevil. That character actually looks... And, like, he studied how to use his eyes the way that a blind person actually would. And studied with blind people and talked to them about their experiences. Which, again, I think if you want to have a blind role, you should have a blind actor in that role. Because they will very rarely get opportunities. But it is possible to write a character who has a disability and not turn them into, like, a plot point.
It should not only be possible, but it should be done all the time.
It is the lowest fucking bar. The lowest bar.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we move on to Bechdel and DuVernay then?
Yeah.
So, no on Bechdel. No, absolutely not even close. No. Moving on to DuVernay, if Bill and Abby just, like, had conversations and interacted, like, that could have been yes for Bechdel already and could have been two black women interacting in space, which is, like, again, some of the lowest bars. But how do we feel about the rest of Bill's story in this episode?
I don't feel like it passes the DuVernay because I don't feel like we learn anything new about her. Pearl Mackey is selling mum please, mum help me, but I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Whew. Well, that's a bummer of a black archive today, huh?
You're welcome, folks. I feel like I have just the thing to help you with that, though.
The Heart of the TARDIS?
That's the one.
Okay, we can hear a word from our sponsor on the way.
This podcast is brought to you by Ganymede User Systems. Ganymede has journeyed to the far corners of the known universe to find new locations and exciting technologies for humanity's continued thriving. Now mining copper ore in Chasm Forge, Ganymede User Systems has developed our state-of-the-art Series 12 smart suits. With automatic robing and connectivity to integrate with your bank account to charge competitive credits for oxygen as you work. If you're looking for a new role with exciting opportunities for advancement, join Ganymede User Systems, and you'll find your job is a breath of fresh air. Ganymede User Systems, putting the you in user.
This is the Heart of the TARDIS, where we talk about feels and supposed morals of the episode.
Bill yelling for her mom as she's pretty much thinking she's gonna die.
Upset. Upsetting.
I'm in shambles.
Yeah.
It's so fucked.
So much of this season only works because Pearl Mackey.
Well said. Exactly. That's the moral of the story.
Yeah.
It also makes me think, do we ever get any talk about her dad?
I don't think so.
We don't know nothing, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Just a thought.
Yeah.
But what else? What do we think the episode is trying to say here?
Besides capitalism is bad and we should burn it all down, Matheson has talked about in interviews where he was like, I was really worried that it was going to be too overt. Jamie, sweetie, it is overt, but no one cares because capitalism sucks. But the line I think that really sticks with me the most is the doctor saying, the universe shows us its true face. When it asks us for help, we show ours by how we choose to respond. That's a very, very 12 response. Like, that is the 12th Doctor to me, who's like, I will let you decide what we're going to do from here, Bill, but I'm telling you the decision we make right now is the one that, like, it tells us who we really are. So make your choice well. And it feels really reminiscent of 13 saying, when people ask me for help, I never refuse.
Aww.
That's the Doctor.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it pretty much just sums it up in that line for us. So yep. I don't know if I have more to add, because so much of this episode is really focused on critiquing capitalism, which I'm totally on board with. So same. I'm not fighting.
Yeah.
Shall we send something to a crack in time and space then?
Man, it's a really tough call. Do we pick, great, she's a racist, or this ableist as fuck stereotype where the Doctor is blind? It's just like a double boo. I hate
this game. Why do we have to choose between two horrible things?
Maybe we'll just end up sending them both. I wouldn't feel sad about that.
Yep. It's our fucking podcast. We do what we want.
That's right.
But we did already talk about the ableist storyline, but we didn't get into Bill's interaction with Dahrin.
Yeah.
Dahrin.
You said that was some sauce.
So, shall we get into it?
Yeah.
You know what this episode needs? An alien calling out a black person for being racist.
Mm.
That'll really show people that race is a social construct and empower victims of racism by framing them as racists against aliens.
Mm.
It doesn't trivialize the very real and non-extraterrestrial presence of racism that a black character would face every day, like Bill.
Yeah.
It's totally chill. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
Because this episode really thinks it's dispelling race and pointing out that it's a subjective category, because it totally is. We agree upon that. But it's directed, again, towards the black character, as if it was scolding her. That deserves that whole point. It's the classic, Earth discovers aliens and anti-blackness goes away, because why fight amongst humans when you can direct all that racist, nationalist energy towards an entirely different species?
Yeah. We elected Obama 2 times. Racism is over. What are you complaining about?
That is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard.
Also, I feel like the way that they wrote Bill is very out of character. Bill would not treat even a person that she's never seen before, or a species she's never seen before, like that.
I feel weirdest after, so it's right after that whole, I'm not prejudiced because I'm black.
Yeah.
And then he's like, why? And then she's looking back at him as she walks away. Yeah, like she's fascinated by him, and not in a Bill fascinated way, in like a you are an object of spectacle way.
I think you can read it in multiple ways, because I didn't know what to do with it previous to this rewatch, and this time around I saw that as his reaction to being like, I literally don't know what you're talking about and why a person like you would be on the receiving end of racism. Hearing that is her saying, wait, you're saying that racism against me doesn't exist in the future? That's amazing. Like, I'm so excited. Tell me more about this. I feel
like you're reading that moment with a lot of charity, but that the script does not bear out.
It totally does not work, but that's what the script thinks it's doing. The script thinks it's saying, yay, we can solve racism, or specifically, we can solve anti-blackness, because racism is based on a category of race that doesn't exist because it's subjective and we made it up. And it's not doing that well, but it thinks that's what it's doing. That's what's frustrating. Also, again, like you said, the way that he reacts is really weird to me, because I also hate the representation of people who are exploited by systems of oppression as just annoying pests that go around yelling at people, that's racist, because that's totally how he's characterized, right?
Yeah.
Because even though they totally have every reason to do so, to yell at people for participating in these systems, it's just reducing these characters to the exact caricature that white privilege wants to see them as.
Mm.
It's just these oversensitive people going around yelling, that's racist, that's sexist, that's homophobic, blah, 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 blah. And that's totally, like, undermines the idea that these are actual systems that have real-life consequences that aren't just about people's feelings.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You can tell a white guy wrote this,
unfortunately.
And just white people writing these scenes in general always feels like the embodiment of the phrase, I don't care if you're black, white, blue, or purple.
Yeah.
Because this is them doing that. They're literally writing in a blue person into a scene to compare them with a black person. If anything, that shows just how other you see them, because you're saying they might as well be lumped in with non-existent blue people.
Yeah.
So nah, fuck that. Absolutely not. And also it feels trivializing, like almost as if someone were to say, love is love, man. I don't care if you marry a man, woman, or fairy, you know, just like whatever.
Yeah, that's the, we've talked about this before. If I can, humor's the first threshold of acceptance. So I make a joke and then I can disregard it because I've made it sound ridiculous, which undercuts your complaint, which is real and legitimate.
Yeah.
So I think that it could have worked if there was none of the great she's racist, if the only joke was Nardole saying some of my best friends are bluish, because then it would have been a blue person critiquing Nardole, who presents as white, and him bumblingly saying the exact shit that racist people say to try and defend themselves. So I think that that's a good punch up, but the rest of it is trash.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up Nardole, because that's actually painting Nardole as the fool in that moment.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the episode right before that moment tries to paint Bill as the same fool.
Yeah.
And those two dynamics are inherently drastically different. Nardole presenting as a white humanoid person.
Yeah.
Interacting with Dokren, like you were saying. And then Bill, a black person who actually receives real life consequences for racism.
Yeah.
And sexism.
And homophobia.
Yeah. Exactly. Just not the character to do this with. Yeah. And they do it to her several times.
Yes.
And I'm done with it. But it also brings up that what they're implying is that in the future, racism is somehow solved and we've moved on from that. Yet capitalism somehow is thriving without it. If that ain't some bullshit. No.
Capitalism is predicated on racism.
How do you think capitalism arose in America without slavery?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Really, bro? I'm ready for some top three moments.
Well, let's, so to the racism and ableism in this episode, bye Ronimo to that.
Bitch.
Now. What about top three? Do we have three? I think we just have two.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of good whole scenes, but it was hard to come up with more than top two, like, actual individual moments.
Yeah.
So one of mine is absolutely when the doctor is just giving it to Nardole and talking about, did you get me crisps? I sent you to Birmingham to get me crisps.
Fuck, I sent you to Birmingham for a packet of crisps.
Yeah, I saw through your cunning ruse.
Yes, well, if you will go thinking for yourself, what do you want?
You know what this is?
If it's not crisps, you're sacked.
Just reminds me of Capaldi playing what's his face?
Malcolm Tucker.
I've asked you to fuck off twice now, and yet you're still here.
Same energy.
The closest he gets to Malcolm Tucker and Doctor Who.
Besides, shuddity up, up, up. That's the other one.
Absolutely. What about you?
It's the same scene. It's like literally seconds later when Nardole's holding that fluid link and he's like, the TARDIS can't take off without it. And the doctor goes, who told you that? And Nardole's like, you. And he goes,
What teach you to trust me? No, I'm docking your paper.
What a chump.
Yeah.
God.
Nardole is a chump, and the doctor is such a troll sometimes.
Absolutely. I don't know if he knew really what he was getting himself into. Because, like, how do you, like, of course the doctor is going to fucking, like, play you like that.
Yeah, what a clown.
And then, of course, the doctor is going to be like, oh, you tell me to do this? I'm going to do the opposite. Like,
yeah. I don't like
push
being told
me.
What to do.
Exactly. We know this. Girl, please. Okay.
Well, I think that's it for this week.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll be back to talk about the sixth episode of Series 10, Extremis. It's all downhill from here.
Woo! Drinks! You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Queer Archive Pod.
We want to hear from you, so send us your thoughts and your feels on this episode or any of your own anti-capitalist screeds. We would love to hear them.
Oh, hell yeah. And please rate and review us on your podcatcher of choice, because it really does help.
Until next time.
Be gay.
Overthrow capitalism, baby.
Yeah. Tune in your speakers and please be my doctor, whoever. Yeah. Yes, sir.